Teachers are powerful people. They change lives. Teachers create, through their teaching, new worlds. They have within their hands the power, terribly to hurt or wonderfully to heal, lives, young and old. Most of us, if we think through our lives and our experience, most of us can find in our memory somewhere a teacher to whom we are indebted. Some caring teacher who was with us at just the right moment. Others of us struggle to get over the damage done by some cruel or uncaring teacher. Teachers are powerful people. So today, when you hear that Jesus went into a synagogue in Capernaum and began to teach, we need to take note. Jesus was a teacher. They never called him reverend. They didn't call him father. They never used the term pastor to refer to him. But they called him rabbi, teacher. Even his enemies called him rabbi and teacher, a term of utmost respect. Throughout Mark's writing, Jesus is referred to as teacher. Even when he performs some of the most remarkable miracles, the stilling of the storm, the raising of the dead, the feeding of the crowds, the curing of an illness, even at those times, he is referred to not as Son of God, not as powerful Lord, not as miracle worker of any kind, though he was all those things. But he is referred to in the text as teacher. These are the things that the teacher does. And when we begin to read the Gospel of Mark, the very first miraculous work that Mark reports Jesus doing, the very action that Jesus performs at the beginning of Mark's Gospel, is the act of teaching. Our first glimpse of Jesus in his public ministry is of a teacher with authority. And people were amazed. And they said, "What is this? What is this that we see and hear and experience?" Notice, they did not say, "Is it a new miracle? Is it a new reality?" No. Is it a new teaching? A new teaching from the teacher, and teaching with authority, so that... Did you also notice that Mark, in the context of this amazing teaching that they were raving about, he doesn't tell us what Jesus said? He doesn't tell us what Jesus was talking about that day in the synagogue. Instead, Mark tells us about this man who came in need of healing, and Jesus cast out of him the demon that oppressed him. "What is this? A new teaching," they asked, "and with authority, even the unclean spirits obey him." Jesus taught with some frequency in the town and village synagogues and also in the Jerusalem temple. But most of his teaching took place on the hills and in the valleys of Galilee, where he walked with his disciples and where the crowds followed him from place to place. And wherever he went, he taught. There was this authority in his teaching that he carried with him everywhere. And the most amazing part of it was his authority to cast out demons from the afflicted. His authority over them, his power over them. Over and over we are told stories of Jesus casting out demons and how people were amazed at his authority over them. This is the work of the teacher, Mark says. Dr. Roger Ray tells a story about himself. He said, "I wrote a letter to a missionary in Papua New Guinea. I was a 19-year-old college student trying to make sense out of the Bible. I was reading the Gospels with an ardent desire to believe what I was reading, but I kept getting hung up on these stories about demon exorcisms. There are many of them there, as you know. Someone in my college campus ministry suggested to me that we no longer see demons in the civilized world, but that missionaries in remote parts of the world did. Well, I knew the name of a missionary in a primitive remote region, so I wrote to him. I wanted him to validate these biblical stories about demons and tell me that he had heard them speak out in the jungle, that he had witnessed an exorcism. I hoped that he could tell me some really hair-raising stories and help me with my confusion over the biblical text. It took him several weeks to answer my letter, but it took me several years to understand his response. He avoided my request for a description of face-to-face encounters with the demonic. He didn't say anything about hearing them speak or about exorcisms. He did, however, say that there were demons in Papua New Guinea and that he was shocked that I had not encountered any in the place where I lived in Memphis, Tennessee. "Do you not encounter the demons every day?" he asked. "Do you not see them at work in pornography and prostitution and poverty and racial hatred? Do you not see the demons?" he asked me. "Indeed we do. Demons just the same, just as powerful as those that Jesus encountered. And you and I have been given the authority to cast them out. The authority that Jesus had, he left it with us and charged us with the responsibility to teach and lead with authority, to do as he did, and to let our lives be the content of our teaching and the casting out of demons our enduring work. Those demons that Jesus encountered have proliferated, and there is in our world disease and poverty and conflict and arrogance in measures that would have surprised Jesus, I think. And you and I have the authority and the responsibility to cast them out. I want you to hear today from two young women who are taking up the call of God in remarkable ways, who themselves are functioning as teachers and who will cast out some of these demons in the work they're going to do. I want you to hear about their work and to regard their ministry as casting out the demons of poverty and want and disease and despair and fear and neglect. And know that they do what they do with the same authority that Jesus exercised. First, Joe DiLoretto is going to say a few words to you about Arms Around Africa and the work of that project. And then Karen Adams is going to talk to you about the Karen Project, which is named after her and will take its effect on the Gulf Coast of our country later next month. Joe?
Good morning. First, I want to take this opportunity to thank First Church for their support of my mission. When an offer was made that money was available to send two containers to Africa, I thought, where would I ever get the help to transport all the things from the storage area I have to also load it in these containers on Christmas week? But the email was sent out on our first link, and 22 people came on a workday morning on Christmas week. And that's why it's so fantastic to be a part of this family at First Church. In Don Kayampa's Bible study on Wednesday night, many times the topic came up of Sierra Leone. When he was a little boy, missionaries would come to his dad's church and talk about this far-off country. And it was just something that caught my attention. And I started looking into it more and found out that long before we were called the United Methodist, back when we were the United Brethren Church, the EUB, they were the first missionaries to come into Sierra Leone. And when we send missionaries from this denomination, we don't only tend to the souls of the people. We take a holistic view, and we do education and medical care. And they're still continuing this work now as United Methodist. If there's a church in Sierra Leone, there's a clinic connected to it and a church school. So when the opportunity came up 2 years ago for me to travel to Sierra Leone, when I went to get my shots, I found out that according to the World Health Organization, this is a country that's number one, the worst, as far as diseases. It is the second poorest country in the world. So any of you who have traveled to Jamaica or Dominican Republic, whatever, you're way above what you'd see in Sierra Leone. When you get off the plane, you get on a ferry, and that's your first view of people with polio just dragging themselves along in the ferry. The disease, there's mutilation going on there. The war has, there's been a war for 11 years now, and instead of killing the people, they choose to cut off arms. It makes a much stronger impression if you're walking around with no arms. The disease of malaria, which is killing more people every day than AIDS. No one has the statistics on what malaria's death rate is because we're talking of remote villages where children are dying every day just because they're not mosquito netting, something so simple. When I went, I thought I was prepared for what I would see, but there's no way it can prepare you for the smell of death, the stacks of garbage everywhere, death lying in the streets, the smells, the sights. But when I come back, I don't think of that. I think of the beautiful people, and that's what's drawing me back. There's a spirit in these people like you don't see on the streets in America. They have a faith that goes beyond anything that we have here. They have hope in their eyes when they see white man coming. I can go there and I can build buildings that are going to fall apart. I can do some nursing, which might help one or two people. But if they have the hope and they pass it on to their children that people in America know about us and they care about us, that's why I want to go back, because I remember the eyes of Aminetta. Aminetta is a 5-year-old little girl that had hope in her eyes every time she saw me, and I'm going back for Aminetta. We have been blessed. We have a generous God. God blesses us with so much. And when he gives us these blessings, they're not for us to keep for ourselves. God gives us blessings for us to pass them on. We can't store it in warehouses here. We can't store it in our bank accounts for our retirement. Sorry, Kenrap. You can't do that. You've got to pass it on. You've got to pass on your blessings. And in a small way, that's what you were doing when you helped pack that shipping container. All I'm here for today, not to ask you for money, not to ask you for more stuff. You can give that if you want. But I'm asking for your prayers. Please pray for our team as we leave on February the 9th. Pray for the wisdom that we know the will of God when we get there. Pray for the people of Africa, that God will wrap his arms around them and he'll protect them, because every single day is a struggle there. And that the faith will carry them through in feeding their children. When a life expectancy is 42 years of age, you know, you don't have very long to live. And all they know is a work, a struggle every single day. And I pray that when we travel, we will have safety. It's a country that is in political unrest always, but right now we're going into an election year, which means more problems. So just pray that when we get there, one of our main reasons for going is Arms Around Africa, the group that I'm connected with. They thought that in some way they wanted to help these people, and a way to do it, because we all happen to be the United Methodists, we thought that to draw up a partnership agreement between the churches in their country and the churches here, a covenant was written up, and we presented this to Bishop Middleton, who is very much a mission-oriented bishop. And it was passed at our conference this year here in central Pennsylvania, and now we are going to represent our conference at the United Methodist Conference in Sierra Leone, and they're bringing it up for a vote there. And if they accept this partnership, it doesn't have to be a church-to-church. It could be a group, a Sunday school class, United Methodist women, whoever that would like to. It's $1,000 a year. And the covenant is very exact what this money would be used for. When you're dealing with people in Africa, it has to be exact, because they need, their lives are such desperate places that they need to have guidelines set for them. And this covenant is very exact on what would be done. And it's to support their church, to pay a mission, a Methodist minister's salary. But more than that, we hope that a rapport can be developed between our people and theirs, and that more people will travel to that country and see how life is there. If they do pass this partnership agreement at their conference, you will be hearing more about it from me. So thank you for your prayers in advance, and God bless all of you.
Thank you, Joe. Good morning. My life started right here in this very church in 1972 when I was standing probably about right here with my mom, Jean Adams, my dad, Labor Jean Adams, my grandmother. Oh, and I was also baptized by Reverend Bauer, if anyone remembers him. My grandmother, if I had to guess, was probably front row, Rose Myers, also a member of the church. My five brothers and sisters, also members of the church, were in these pews too, I'm sure of it. As a kid, my role models were Fanny Fink and Reverend Chuck Hiller. One day, Chuck told me that I would do something big for God, and I had absolutely no idea what he meant, because I was only maybe 12 at the time. Now I look back and I realize I was in God training when I moved to New Orleans. I moved to New Orleans in the late 1990s and returned here in August 31st of 2005, when Hurricane Katrina hit. Every hurricane that came our way, they told us to evacuate. Every time we evacuated, it never hit. As every year passed, I got more and more annoyed about evacuating. I would pack this bag right here, probably the same bag every year, with my belongings, and go somewhere to a hotel and spend maybe $70-$80 to evacuate. And to a college student, that's a lot of money. Well, in 2001, we had what they called the big one coming at us. It was a Category 5, and it was headed right for New Orleans. And I said, forget this, I'm not leaving again, I'm staying. So I stayed. By the time it hit the shore, it was a Category 1 or a Category 2. Now, I will tell you that I remember the windows rattling and the wind howling through the two houses between, and it was a little scary. But when I got outside, nothing was wrong. The power was out. That was about it. Maybe some trees down. But we had dodged the big one. Friday, August 26, 2005, last year, I had a pool party at my house. This was the Friday night before the big one really hit. My friends and I were laughing and having a great old time, saying, hey, we should have this same party in September. None of us knowing that 1 week later, some all of us would be spread all across the United States and some of us would be homeless. Sunday morning at 4 a.m., I woke up to the mayor on the TV because I was watching TV all night long. He said they were ordering 20,000 body bags. When I heard the word 20,000 body bags, I grabbed this and I got out of Dodge. I'll never forget leaving New Orleans because it was 4 o'clock in the morning and I was scared. I was scared because there was no one in a city that never sleeps. And I mean that fully, a city that never sleeps. There wasn't a time in my all my years down there that I didn't, was on the road and didn't see someone. Well, as I proceeded to my destination in Alabama to wait for the storm to pass, I was on the opposite side of the road. The roads were in contraflow, so I was going up the south way. No police, no nothing. I was scared because I didn't know where I was going and how I was going to get there without being able to see any road signs on the road. So I did the best thing I could do, besides pray, call my mom. When we returned to our nightmare, we needed this. To many of you in Mechanicsburg, this face mask means we're going to use it to paint with. To us in New Orleans, it means it's going to protect us from dead bodies, the stench of decaying bodies, rotten food, mold. Unbeknownst to everyone, this would become their wardrobe for the next so many months, part of the wardrobe that people wore. Anytime FEMA, the insurance company, the builders call you, potential construction workers, you need this mask to go in your house because your house has mold. You asked me why, Karen. Why on the anniversary of Katrina today, 5 months ago, do they still wear the mask? Why? Because their home is still moldy. Because after 12 feet of water minimum sat in your home for a week or more, that's why. There's still people down there sleeping on floors. Maybe with someone they know, maybe they don't know them. Some of us are lucky enough to go home and have food, water, clothing, and a mattress. They are not. The city they live in is surrounded by trash. Every time I see a refrigerator that someone put out because it no longer works in Mechanicsburg, I flash back to my nightmares of New Orleans. When I returned to collect what was left of my belongings, I saw refrigerators everywhere. They were oozing rotten meat and everything under the sun, maggots, the whole nine yards. They stunk like you could not believe, and that smell is etched in my brain for a lifetime. Every time I flash back to it, I see people's belongings that they accumulated their entire life in a pile of rubbish on the side of the road, molded. Many people haven't heard lately anything about Katrina victims. That's because all they show is the French Quarter. The French Quarter is great, actually. It's perfect. There isn't very much wrong with it because the storm missed the French Quarter. That's the highest ground in New Orleans. But let me tell you, many people do not live in the French Quarter. The people live around the French Quarter. So these people still need our help. Some of you may know that I interviewed for an article that was featured in the November issue of The Link. the Central Pennsylvania Conference of the United Methodist Church monthly newspaper. At that time, I learned about how Mission Central was helping Katrina victims and the Gulf Coast as well. One thing led to another, and shortly after that, I took an idea to Sue Higgins at Mission Central. Never in my wild imagination did I believe that that could actually happen. I was thinking that I could take a tractor trailer full of supplies down to Louisiana to all my friends and coworkers. How would I get a truck? Who would drive the truck? I'm not a truck driver. I didn't know how we'd pay for it. Well, my mom says that it's hard to tell what Karen is going to do. She never knows what I'm capable of doing because I'll probably try it. Well, now I'm trying to help rebuild homes in Louisiana, people's belongings that they've lost. Many of my coworkers need your help with donations. There's a list of needs in the flyers, and Mission Central will not turn anything down but clothing. We set up bins in the Norfex to drop off items in the church, and of course you can always drop it off at Mission Central. The project, named Project Karen, was named after me, but the acronym stands for Kenner Area Recover Effort Network. I thank you, Mission Central thanks you, and definitely the people that are receiving these items thank you.
We have been given authority by God through Jesus Christ to proclaim, to heal, to teach, to change, to bring redemption, to expel demons. We are under an imperative from God, and we need not fear the principalities and powers of this world or of any world, for Christ has been given all authority in heaven and on earth. Now we need to start applying that authority. Well, we've already started. We need to continue. But the ball is in our courts. For if the claims of Jesus' authority are true, then it requires a response from you and from me. Not all of us are called by God to travel to the Gulf Coast. Not all of us are called by God to travel to the other side of the world in ministry, but some of us are. In our homes, in our places of work and play, in our traveling, know that you represent Christ, that you are responsible for answering His call there, and that there are demons in those places that need casting out. You are responsible for answering Christ's call, and by your life and your example, you teach others who Jesus is, and you encourage them to follow. Would you pray with me? We struggle, loving God, to master the demons of our own lives, the demons of addictions and selfishness and pride and arrogance. And we recognize the demons that infest our world with racism and poverty and want and disease and war. By ourselves, we cannot confront, much less overcome, any of these things. And so we recognize in our world and in our lives your authority and your power. Grant to us the conviction that we need, the strength and wisdom that we need to overcome any demon we encounter in any place, whether it is simply a child who has been hurt or a whole nation that has been torn by war. Give to us the conviction that we need to go to those people and those places, or to send others in our behalf to represent you and do the work that you would have us to do. For we offer ourselves to you, we offer our energy to you, our conviction to you, we offer our lives to you. In the name of Jesus, who is our Savior. Amen.